FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's June 19th, 2018. Well, the Trump economy appears to be rolling along. Is it really rolling along? Well, we'll talk about that. But as always, be part of the show. Make my day. Send me an email. Got lots of them to read, and I'll be doing them on a show shortly. But in the meantime, the Trump economy, is it too good to be true? Is it real, or is it Memorex or plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery on a dying patient? Well, those are all good questions. And Daniel Amadouri is with me now, futuremoneytrends.com. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Kerry.
Always. So we're looking at the Trump economy, at least if you look at the numbers. Now, look, we know the inflation number is BS, but the fact is that the price of a Thanksgiving dinner went down last year. That's one of my main indicators that I look at. And I think that the employment numbers really are picking up, because when you look at the ads for the first time ever, now granted the measure of joblessness is flawed, but for the first time ever, there's more than one job for every unemployed individual in accordance with the U1 cooked up index. That's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
No, it really is. And, you know, we all lived through the Obama years and the Bush years. And I feel like, you know, because the numbers are so jaded and we don't even really know what the economic numbers are. They're so fudged.
No.
And nobody fully knows. Even these private companies like ShadowStats, they don't have access to everything that was there. They don't have access to really what's going on with the birth-death model. So I don't think anybody really knows, other than, you know, the closest thing you can trust for unemployment is Gallup. You know, Gallup just does a scientific poll to find out who's unemployed. And, you know, that number has been dropping under Trump. It was dropping under Obama, too. Mm-hmm. But Obama's economy always felt like it was in recession. It really did.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because of the regulations. You know, I don't know. I don't know why that is. But I know that since the election, that stigma has left. And perhaps it's a good chunk of the middle class just being more optimistic. But you've got, it's hard to fight what's going on when you look at like scientific polls like business optimism, small business optimism, hiring. All these things look positively strong. So, you know, potentially we were never out of recession during the Obama years. And, you know, so that actually connects to the stock market too. When people go, oh, the bull market's old, or this economic cycle's old. Well, it's old if you're using government propaganda as your measuring stick.
Yeah.
But maybe we're year one out of the 2008 recession in 2018, 2017. So maybe it's not an old cycle. Maybe the cycle just started.
Hey, and when you look at the deregulation of certain sectors, we just had the modification to Dodd-Frank and so many other regulations. He started out saying we're going to repeal two regulations for every new regulation that's passed. The last I heard, it was over four. All of that stuff, look, maybe it's psychology, maybe it's a placebo, but when they try large-scale, you know, testing of new drugs and they give placebos to a control group, you know what? Some of those people taking the placebo actually get better. So if this is placebo economy, it's good placebo, right?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, look, the one thing that leaves me, you know, got to keep my feet grounded is that the debt hasn't gone away. Now, will he reset the debt? Will there be some sort of global jubilee at some point? I don't know, but you know, the debt's still there. The debt, the consumer debt, the public debt, that has helped drive a lot of the spending. But man, even that, you know, I don't know if you saw this article yesterday, but I think it was in the last 3 months here or last year, consumers have brought down their actual credit card debt by $40 billion. And of course, MarketWatch.com was spinning the story as this negative thing that people are reducing debt. It shows that we're at the end of a cycle. But I don't know. Maybe people are making extra money because of the tax cut. Maybe they're making more money because their wages are going up for the first time in 15, 20 years relative to the government inflation. And they're paying down debt. They're feeling better about themselves, you know. So, but there are some unsustainable things out there, like the housing market.
Yes.
I mean, look, it's absurd what some of these communities have. I mean, people are paying, you know, they make $6,000 a month and they're paying $3,000-$4,000 in mortgage payments. I mean, so,
yeah.
You know, there are some very unsustainable things that Trump's going to have to deal with, and the economy is going to have to sort through. There's just so much misallocation of capital because of the last, I don't know, 50 years of all this government intervention. So we'll see. Trump's plan is to get the economy booming and then deal with our problems. Well, so far, so good.
Hey, well, if you look at it, yeah, we do have a lot of problems that are seemingly intractable. States are on the skids, like Illinois, like Kentucky. All of these states have got huge unfunded pension liabilities. New Jersey, Connecticut is on the skids. And while the tax bill that got passed definitely helped businesses, it definitely hurt those blue states, or I should say the high tax states, but I guess I repeat myself. And, you know, those blue states are seeing continued exoduses, like your home state of California, mine of New York and New Jersey. People are getting the hell out of there, Dan, because they say, why should I just continue to be a milk cow for these states? And they're taking away my rights, my right to self-defense, my right to double park, my right to use a cell phone wherever the hell I like. You know, all these things, they keep restricting the freedom. And let's not forget, Social Security is dipping into its so-called illusory surplus now because it's not generating enough money to pay out the benefits, because we got the baby boomers, my generation, retiring 10,000 at a time. I think one thing that's real murky with the employment stats, like we're talking about Shadow, he says like the unemployment's 25%. When you add in the engineers who are flipping burgers at McDonald's, et cetera, what I think is that the actual workforce has declined in the past year, you know, 500 days that Trump has been president, because more of the baby boomers can actually afford to retire now with real estate prices high and stocks way up.
Yeah, no, and it does make sense that the labor force participation rate would go down because of the demographic shift. So that, you know, a lot of people like myself even were worried about it when it got to the extreme. But at some point in time, you know, it has to actually be reduced because of all the baby boomers. But I also think that, you know, when you're looking like the Trump economy, the look at the dollar has been in essentially a new bear market for the last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Gold's been in a bull market. And I, you know, if you recall during the last rate hike cycle in the early 2000s, that was when gold bottomed and ultimately went all the way to 1900 from about 250. So I think this is also a good environment for gold and commodities. And it's funny, you know, you wouldn't believe it owning the stocks, but the commodities as a whole, the raw commodities like oil and lumber and gold and sugar and all these things are actually doing really well. The commodities are clearly in a bull market. And it's like Steve Sugarwood talks about, you know, they're hate it. Okay. That's, you know, one of his most important things he checks off. They're hate it. They're in an uptrend. And nobody wants them, but they're in a confirmed uptrend. These commodities are doing very well, but nobody wants to own them. So I think the commodities are going to do well over the next 2 years, 3 years. And I think Trump's going to do pretty well because you do have that optimism that's back. And as you know, the psychology of an economy is very important. They call it the wealth effect. Even the Fed is, you know, trying to always manipulate this with housing prices and stock prices, that wealth effect, that feeling, that feeling good. And you know, just, you know, I with Shadow Stats and the BLS, I don't think either one of them are right just because it's so fudged at this point. But, you know, there are signs that, like, you know, look right in front of me, like there are worker shortages. Like we're seeing it in Texas right now. There's a huge worker shortage for these oil companies and these fracking companies. So you're actually seeing it in the paper, you know, where they're, you know, if anybody's listening to this and you're looking for $100,000, $120,000 a year job, and all you need to do is drive a truck, man, get your butt to Texas right now, because Right now, they will hire anybody. There's a massive worker shortage for these jobs. But there's also, a worker shortage for nationwide. Again, this goes back to the BLS stuff. But according to the BLS, there's more job openings than there are workers.
Exactly.
So it's an interesting time. Certainly, the economy has definitely turned a corner here. But, is it all for nothing? Because the debt didn't go away. There's so much unsustainability in all these stimulus programs, so it's certainly a double-edged sword that Trump has, because this thing could just as easily implode in his face. But so far, his plan is working, and I think we talked about this on last time I was on your show. I have doubted Trump many times, and he seems to prove me wrong. I remember when he talked about McCain. I was like, no, that one probably went too far. And then when he talked about a Muslim ban, I believed Trump could win from the very beginning. And then when he did that Muslim ban as a candidate, I remember thinking to myself and telling my wife, I'm like, I think he can win, but I think he's now sabotaging himself or something. I'm like, why would he do that?
Yeah.
And of course, he proved me wrong. It wasn't sabotage at all. It was something that fired up the people to go out to the polls because they didn't want a Muslim ban, but they wanted a stricter vetting on the immigrants that were coming in.
Hey, I said from the beginning when I saw Trump speak at Freedom Fest in 2015, up until that point, I wasn't sure if he was serious or not. Like, I have a friend who knows him pretty well, and he kept telling me that he was going to run, and I kept laughing at him. It's just a PR stunt. But once I saw him take on the world and win over the libertarians at Freedom Fest, I said, this is for real. He's going to do it. And I never deviated. I knew he was going to win. And I wrote an article recently, that you can do anything, because look, all the odds were against the guy. If you want to have a good laugh, watch the YouTube saying he can't win. He has no path, no path to victory. Like Rachel Madcow saying, if he has the best day of his life, he's still going to lose. And then watch, like, after 11 o'clock when it's called, when they finally called Pennsylvania for Trump. And I mean, hey, just if I was there, I would have been passing out razor blades and filling up the bathtubs, because they were like on the edge there. I never saw anything. We suffered through 8 years of Obama, 8 years of W. And you know what? We did what we had to do. And we more or less, we complained about it, but not like these people with the Trump derangement syndrome, Dan.
Well, they created a boogeyman, right? Oh my gosh, this racist guy is going to go deport gays and Mexicans. And they are scared of this boogeyman that they've created, and they believe it, even though, despite just looking at his administration, clearly all these boogeyman things they were scared of never happened and aren't going to happen. There's not deportation teams running around with guns.
Only for fugitives.
Getting rid of everybody.
Only for fugitive illegal aliens, generally. And if they just gave them over to ICE when they got out of jail, they wouldn't have to do that. All right. Yeah, they do clear them out periodically. But, he's not really concerned about law-abiding illegals. Yes, he'd like them to become legal and give them a pathway to it, but a pathway that they earn, not that's just given to them to increase a Democratic turnout. Hey, we can't forget about North Korea either. He literally pulled a rabbit out of the hat. And it makes you wonder why, what interest in the U.S., in the cabal, wanted to keep that thing going for 60 years. There's something more to this that I feel we're missing, that this whole thing has been stoked and contrived almost, and just put on by the military-industrial intelligence complex,
To the point where they were trying to sabotage it. I mean, you saw John Bolton out there. Here's Trump and the Secretary of State Pompeo making peace with this North Korean dictator. And you've got John Bolton out there running his mouth about North
Korea.
And then Giuliani steps into it and starts talking about how the Korean leader got on his knees. And I'm just like, wow, we literally have people openly sabotaging this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think Giuliani is on his side. Bolton, you got to wonder about the neocon thing. but seems to have been remedied nonetheless. I predict they will fully disarm because it's just not in their interest anymore. And China doesn't seem to care about North Korea at all. They've outlived their usefulness for China. And I felt from the get-go, once the guy like walks across the DMZ to go, sit down and have a drink with his buddies, the South Korean leadership, and he does that multiple times, and then he's letting hostages go. The next test will be when they withdraw their artillery from the DMZ, from right at the edge of it, which can reach Seoul suburbs, and which I think they're going to do. Because, look, when you saw the picture of them together, you know, I know it's a photo op and all that, but this guy was eating out of Trump's hand. And if he wants to get McDonald's in Pyongyang, then he's going to have to play ball.
Yeah, right? I think I almost speculate if something happened behind the scenes where it was pretty much the end of the road for that regime,
mm-hmm.
or the end of the road for the weapons, because all of a sudden they really wanted to negotiate. Mm-hmm. Although Trump is the first one to ever try something different. I thought it was very, just Trumpist, the way Trump speaks so openly to people. You know, he was talking to reporters last week, and he was saying Obama told him that the biggest thing that's going to keep him up at night and the biggest concern is going to be North Korea mm-hmm. and potential for war. And Trump turned to Obama, he said, have you guys spoken to him? And everybody said, no, they hadn't.
What are you talking about? Speak to him? He's a monster. Can't talk to him. Right? You know,
yeah, but yet we'll talk to Saudi Arabia. We're best friends with them, and they do all mm-hmm. kinds of human rights violations. Shoot, I think they even made them, like, in charge of human rights at the UN. And then we're friends with the Soviet – we were friends – or at least speaking with the Soviet Union at their time, and Stalin. And I mean, look, we had our own president, FDR, you know, put Japanese people in camps just because they were Japanese.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, this is ridiculous that there's all this outrage over us speaking to an enemy. Look, I mean, it's – do you want bombs or do you want diplomacy? And I think it's very frustrating for these people who hate Trump and they have this derangement syndrome – because he is getting things done, and he's just continuously proving all the experts wrong, from his nomination to his election and the presidential election to, you know, oh, the economy is going to implode and World War III is going to start on Inauguration Day. Well, the economy is booming and he's making peace.
Yeah. Yeah. And Iran evidently is next on the hit parade. But no, I totally agree with you. Look, Dennis Rodman, not among the most credible of sources, but he's on there that night on TV talking to CNN, and he's got a Make America Great hat on. And he's saying, I told Obama that Kim Jong-un wanted to speak with him and said they didn't give me the time of day. And, you know, before they conferred with Kim Jong-un this time, the Trump administration, they sat down and they fully debriefed Dennis Rodman. So the guy might be a wacko, but nonetheless, he had some type of relationship with North Korea's leader, and it seems to have borne fruit.
Yeah, and people have to remember that this kid went to school in Switzerland, so he'd experienced the West for several years while in college. He's 27 years old. He has seen South Korea. He's visited China. So, look, the kid knows that there's a better world for his people. And, despite what everybody wants to say about us talking to a dictator, look, this is the best way forward. You know, rather than have a war, we can potentially help this guy have a better economy for his own people. You really want to help those starving Koreans, North Koreans, then be friends with the United States. And let's do commerce. Let's do business. It's just like, our founding fathers. They encouraged commerce with all, alliances with none. And I don't know, you know, what Trump does behind the scenes, but, you know, everybody's saying he's shifting away from these allies. Well, look, these allies were all constantly stabbing us in the back.
Yeah.
You know, despite whether you disagree with the Iraq war or not, which in hindsight, it's easy for everybody to say they're anti-Iraq war. But look what the United States did in World War I, World War II. We were completely funded the defense during the entire Cold War. And here the United States asks these guys, these allies in Europe, NATO, for help during Iraq. Whether you agree or disagree, that's bullshit. that they didn't help us and that they didn't, that it wasn't unanimously standing shoulder to shoulder after we had funded their defense for the last 50 years.
Yeah. Hey, and the U.S. military is a big contributor to the German economy. There's bases there, and it has been for many, many years, and they can't even manage to kick in 2% of their GDP to fund the effort, to fund NATO. And then you look at the soy boy, Pierre Trudeau. You know, he just turns your stomach. He's so vapid. He's so hollow and superficial and really just...
Kerry, this is speculative on my part, but I'd love to bounce this idea off you. I've been thinking about this for a few weeks now because I noticed Trump with North Korea, he's really shifting towards Asia, like very close with South Korea, Japan, and even China. Even though there's this tariff thing, you notice he did a lot of threats against China and then he hit the EU and Canada. Mm-hmm. And I almost wondered if Trump, just as a big picture thinker, looks at it and goes, do you want to be allies and best buddies with Europe? Who, yes, they share our culture, but they're going away. Or do you want to be friends with China and have some sort of, you know, friendship and commerce with them? And the United States can be great for another 100 years attached to China, rather than being attached to Europe, who basically is literally just, you know, in 25, 30 years, it'll just be another part of Africa.
It seems like it. It's a little scary what's happening in Europe, the so-called civilized part of the world. And there's no growth there. There's no creativity. They're overtaxed, overregulated. They make ours look like non-existent. Their unemployment has been through the roof for years and years.
Ridiculous, yeah.
And there's no hope, which is why I've met so many people, Europeans in Florida, who just have said, hey, I can start a business here. I've got a lot of opportunities I would never have in Western Europe. Eastern Europe also is very much on the U.S.'s side. It's pretty amazing when you look at Eastern Europe and see they know what it's like not to have freedom. And they know what it's like to have a totalitarian state running things. And we're going to see. Well, look, there is hope because look what happened with Italy recently, Dan.
Yeah. No, and it's funny. You know, I want to go visit, take my kids to see Europe. And I'm like, man, you know, I hope it's not completely ruined. You know, when, you know, every time all these stabbings happening in London, London's becoming a more of a dangerous place.
Oh, yeah.
Paris, you know, they're having some sort of Islamic terrorist attack every 6 to 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're actually going to check out Italy in a few weeks here. And looking forward to that trip. But yeah, no, it's there are some reasons to be optimistic in many parts of the world. But, you know, at the same point in time, there's a lot of things that President Trump needs to change with all these relationships. And it does blow me away. Like if anybody ever, the best thing about Trump is that he's exposed the media. You know, if you go to a foreign country, if you go to Argentina, or you go to Mexico, go to Panama, man, you ask the cab driver or anybody there about the news, right off the bat, they'll tell you the news is just government propaganda. They knew it. They've known it for a long time.
Yes.
In the United States, they didn't wake up to this until just probably the last year and a half, 2 years.
I know.
And now for the first time, I'm hearing Americans saying, oh, it's just propaganda. And that it's always been propaganda, but just people are starting to understand it and realize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he totally lifted the veil on the deep state, on the shadow government, and on the media, which is just an extension of the deep state. It's they are hand in hand, and that's one of the great gifts of Trump. Is whether you love him or hate him, it doesn't matter. He's exposed all of these petty politicians and media people for what they are. And we can also thank Julian Assange over at WikiLeaks as well for a lot of that too.
Yeah, he's one of the last real journalists alive.
Yeah, so it would seem. So outlook for metals, we think in later on in the year, this is probably going to reverse itself, the little decline we've had now.
You know, I'm the worst forecaster for the precious metals. And I can tell you that I was following a very simple trend. I noticed in rate hike cycles in the 30s, the 70s, and the 2000s, the gold had always gone up with rate hikes. And in 2015, the same is true. However, this last rate hike, something changed, and it's to start. And I'm not just talking about gold dropping, you know, 30, 40 bucks here in the last few weeks, but gold had been higher each rate hike from the previous rate hike, with the exception of this one. It actually was lower than it was the previous rate hike. Correct. So that was a trend change. And then we saw this big drop. So, which typically a week later after a rate hike, we would be making a 52-week high. So I don't know. I know the precious metals are low. I know they're a good buy. I'm accumulating them because they are in a technical bull market along with other commodities. But, you know, as far as a forecast for gold and silver, I hate to even predict it. I've been wrong too many times to predict where the metals are going. All I can say is the fundamentals look good. If there's going to be inflation, which it looks like there's going to be some price inflation, sure. Just because the fact of the matter, because the commodities are up and oil's up. There's also some worker shortages with actual semi truck drivers.
Right.
You're seeing that take effect in you look at a stock like General Mills, which is probably one of the safest and best companies on the planet. Mm-hmm. The stock is down 42% in the last since its high in 2016. It's down probably 28% year to date. That's insane. I don't think this company's ever seen it. Look at it this way. In 2008, General Mills had a positive year. They were one of the few companies that was up. This company really doesn't have moves like this,
No. But
it is having a move like that for the first time because of all this. The inflation is really starting to affect these companies. And it's the same thing. You look at General Mills, you look at Hershey or Kellogg, all these guys that are tied to the commodities, they're all seeing a big, you know, they're all at 52-week lows right now.
Right.
In a stock market, you don't hear about that, but you've got some world dominating companies at 52-week lows right now. And actually, you look at General Mills specifically, I think it's at like a 5-year low. You're buying it for what it sold for it at in 2013. And it's because of what's going on with real price inflation.
Yeah, it's real. And especially in the ag commodities, you know, with China really acquiring a lot of corn, and now China has made the decision that the quickest way to reduce pollution is to start cutting their gas with ethanol like we do here, which is of questionable merit, but it does bring down the pollution somewhat. All of those things, I think you're right. And the interest rates, which have been low for so long, they've got to be raised, they've got to be normalized. It's starting to do more harm than good. I mean, it has been doing more harm than good for quite some time. So the best place to find your work, futuremoneytrends.com?
Yeah. Futuremoneytrends.com. We're running, we just released a special report on a new IPO. If you go to futuremoneytrends.com/live, LIVE, you can learn about a new company that we partnered with. It's a blockchain AI company.
Oh, cool.
But it's with a rock star. It's with one of the most successful entrepreneurs of all time. So Check that out, and you can subscribe for free.
All right, excellent. Hey, and like I said, join the discussion, join the dialogue, email us. I answer all. I'll read them on the show if they're really good. And Dan, it's always great to have you on. Oh, the email address, in case you don't have it, kl@carrylutz.com. Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Dan, it's always great having you on. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.